Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Mike Lofgren, who has spent 28 years working in the Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of the new book, The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mike Lofgren.
It's good to be here again.
And it looks as though the Democrats are less useless and that the crazy Republicans, Michelle Bachmann survived, and we're not sure about Alan West down in Florida, but certainly on the Senate side, the religious crazies got knocked out, Murdoch and Aiken. So what's your assessment of the Republicans going crazy, the Democrats becoming useless, and we'll talk about the middle class being shafted later?
Well, Romney was probably one of the more plausible candidates that the GOP could nominate, given their field of hopefuls. And the fact that a challenger could not win with a 7.9% national unemployment rate, and of course, unofficially, much higher of people who've given up looking for work or are working part-time and want to work full-time, that would be a kind of thing that would saddle any incumbent with a very uphill climb. But the fact that the Republicans could not win in that environment means the Republican message is just not selling. Now, many Republicans, I think, based on what I've seen, will try to rationalize their defeat. Well, Romney wasn't a real conservative. We didn't communicate our vision properly. We were swimming against rigged polling, the bias of the lamestream media. Hurricane Sandy stalled our momentum, and so on and so forth, ad infinitum, ad nauseum. Nevertheless, their message did not sell. And I think the Democrats did an excellent job of a ground game. Now, in my home state of Ohio, there are 88 counties. And as I recall, I may not have the numbers totally right, but it's within that order of magnitude that the Romney campaign had about 31 field offices in the state. Obama had something like over 130. So he was just blanketing the state of Ohio with a very ferociously targeted ground game. And on the surface, it looks like the super PACs and the fake 501c4 charitable organizations did not swing the election to the GOP, even though the spending by these vehicles was very heavily weighted towards the Republicans. I would be cautious on that because it's only been 2 years since Citizens United, and they're first now just getting on their feet. And in the future, political managers are going to learn how to micro-target campaigns and demographic groups with much greater precision and effort. Karl Rove looked like a buffoon last night, but don't assume there won't be a learning curve.
So, Mike Lofgren, obviously the Democrats decided to put all of their financial efforts into the Senate and the presidency. They probably, I think, figured they didn't have a chance of turning the House back into Democratic control. And conversely, Karl Rove and others and the super PACs and the billionaires poured a lot of money into the Congress, I guess as a firewall against Obama, and they retained control. And an example of the money disparity: Michelle Bachmann, who barely eked out a victory, she outspent her Democratic opponent 12-1. So that seems to be the calculation, right?
Oh, absolutely. It did prevent worse losses. Now, the Democrats actually did well relative to some of the presidential year elections in Congress. The big wave elections tend to be the midterm elections. Now, in Clinton's re-election in 96 and Bush's in 2004, their party in the House only picked up a couple of seats. So I think the 6 or 8 seats or whatever they're projecting now was a fairly creditable performance given how they tended to be outspent. You mentioned Michelle Bachmann's campaign. Now, Freedom Works and the various Tea Party super PACs massively funded Joe Walsh's campaign in Illinois, but he lost. And Alan West is being kind of a sore loser, but last I heard, he was down by 2,500 votes with 100% of the vote in. So I think 25, if it were 250 votes, he might have an issue. 2,500 would probably hold.
Again, I'm speaking with Mark Loughran, who spent 28 years working as a congressional Republican staffer in the Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees. He's the author of the new book, The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. So John Boehner has already come forth with the ritual conciliation speech. However, if you listen carefully to what he said, he talks about working together on budget cuts and revenues, but he pretty clearly he wants to retain tax cuts for the rich, and presumably that's a part of why the oligarchs in this country funded them. You know, he danced around it, talked about how we can't possibly have tax increases on the job creators in small business, which nobody, by the way, is talking about doing. So that's their firewall against tax cuts for the rich. So you got the fiscal cliff coming up, and I think more importantly, in late February, you've got the new debt ceiling looming. So given what happened last time with the debt ceiling and the fact that Grover Norquist has most of the Republican House signed up with a no tax increase pledge, if they can finesse the sequester and the so-called fiscal cliff, which I think is being exaggerated, they're still going to really come to the crunch in late February on the debt ceiling.
That's right. Now, of course, one thing you have to understand is John Boehner, who's kind of a country club Republican of the old school, is walking a fine line because he's going to be the one or one of the Republicans to negotiate the whole fiscal cliff negotiations, and that has to be done before January 1st. Well, the next election for Speaker of the House doesn't come until after that. So it's kind of like a political gun to his head. He can't diss the extreme fiscal conservatives in his faction, and I'm sure Eric Cantor is waiting in the wings to take the job away from him if he were to cut a deal with President Obama on getting out of the fiscal cliff. I think having heard what he said, it actually sounded a little more conciliatory than what Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, the Republican leader in the Senate, said, which sort of sounded like sour grapes.
Sure. He's basically trying, which seems to be endemic in the Republican Party nowadays, denying data and denying reality, this sort of anti-science bias that they have. He's more or less saying that you can only be a move to the right, President Obama, even though this election looks like a kind of win for liberal, secular America.
Yeah, well, he said something to the effect that the president shouldn't think that the American public was rewarding him for his failures and excesses, which on election night sounds kind of churlish.
Sure, but I think the bottom line is he's more or less saying, you know, you can only move to the right and the center. You can't move to the left. And the point is that the left is what showed up last night or yesterday, at least.
Well, or just people who weren't quite ready for people like Todd Akin or Richard Murdoch and some of the other crazies.
Sure.
I mean, there's a lot of people who do not necessarily buy the Democratic or the liberal or the progressive philosophy who nonetheless, it scares the daylights out of them that there's a party that's anti-science, that is apparently denying the facts of human reproductive biology.
So back to the House then, Mark Loughran. What's your sense, though, of how much they can finesse? None of them want the sequester. They don't want the cuts on the Pentagon budget. And of course, you know, concurrently, the same percentage is going to be taken out of all of the other government departments. So it's a very blunt instrument, the sequester, but it may in many ways be the only way to get the defense budget cut, which of course is ludicrously high.
Well, yeah, it would need to be reduced in any case, in my opinion, having looked at it professionally for a couple of decades in my job in the House and Senate. However, I think the fact that they're so protective of defense does give Obama a lever for negotiating a deal on other matters as well, whether it's cuts in domestic spending, tax increases, and so forth. And for that matter, I've always thought that the fiscal cliff is not Armageddon. It could have, the spending cuts could have some short-term effects. Mainly they'd be in the Washington area because so much of that spending occurs here. The tax increases wouldn't hit immediately, and it would bring back the tax rates that were in the 1990s. Under Clinton, and to be honest, a Republican Congress, we had pretty decent growth rates then, and the tax rates then didn't seem to impede the economy. There's no reason to think that a 4-point increase in the top marginal rate is going to cause this country to sink to the level of poverty of Somalia.
Well,
that matter, the Department of Defense would be cut back to the level of 2006 or 2007. That's not a horrible cut.
Well, of course, I think Boehner made it pretty clear. He put down a marker that no tax cuts, no ending tax cuts for the rich or the top percent. He tried to suggest it's all about not punishing small business when it's protecting the privileges of billionaires. And he also said that he can make up revenues through closing tax loopholes. Also, that's what Romney said. I mean, that's a bit of a chimera, isn't it?
Well, that's totally a non-starter, because when you say that you can make up for billions in tax cuts for the rich, as Romney did, by closing tax loopholes, there aren't enough tax loopholes of this sort of corporate jets variety to even remotely approach that. What that means is you have to take away the tax deductions of middle-class people on their home mortgage deduction, on the health care exclusion, and things like that, child tax credit. And politically, let's be realistic, that is impossible.
So, Mike Lofgren, what about then if they can somehow paper this over or kick the can down the road? In late February, you have the increase in the debt ceiling, and your book, The Party is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. You had a ringside seat at these amazing antics of these various deficit reduction commissions. But the long and the short of it is you have the Tea Party. I was watching their spokesperson today on television again, refusing to talk about revenues, refusing to talk about taxing the rich, even though they're supposed to be a grassroots movement, and all about deficit reduction. So you can see the kind of lines being drawn here, and you've got Grover Norquist having intimidate them all into signing this pledge. Won't it be a repeat of what happened last time?
I don't, I could be wrong, but I don't think so. They didn't come out of that looking very good. They did not come out of the whole fiasco where Standard & Poor's downgraded the debt looking like a governing party or a potential governing party. They looked like fools. They looked intransigent. They looked, some of them, like Joe Walsh, fanatical. And I think, for instance, on the extension last Christmas of the payroll tax cut, which Obama wanted because its payroll tax is very regressive, it stops at $110,000, so it's going to hit mainly working people. A lot of Republicans didn't want to continue it because it didn't have anything to do with the Koch brothers' fortunes. But they understood at the end of the day that they were just going to get clobbered with this. And I think the public is a little more educated about what the debt ceiling is and the consequences of children playing with matches, which is what the House Republicans were doing in 2011.
So, Mike Loughran, and just in the last minute or so then, are you saying that these people who have exhibited less than rational behavior and are denying reality, science, and facts have had a cold shower, that they are rational enough to notice that the American people, by and large, repudiated their positions, and whether they are religious fanatics or Tea Party anti-tax zealots? The long and the short of it is, the reality seems to be intruding, but I'm not sure that aren't they, a lot of them are immune to that, aren't they?
Well, a lot of them are, but there is, I presume, a group of them that have learned that you can't just keep bashing your head against a brick wall and expect the brick wall to fall down. And the repudiation they got at the polls, when they all expected in their kind of reality-challenged bubble for Romney to win, has to have something of a sobering-up effect. I mean, I'm not saying that they're all going to, you know, come to their senses, but the cold fear of being held in contempt by the public, if they perpetrate another fiasco, may make them do the right thing, whether they want to or not.
Well, just in closing then, Mike Loughran, you mentioned Boehner's looking over his shoulder because Eric Cantor is clearly undermining him at every moment and is a very, very ambitious, and I would assume somewhat ruthless operator there, and he's got the Tea Party caucus in his pocket. So do you think there's going to be a showdown between those two and that the more reasonable guy is going to win?
That's to be determined. I think I've laid out the scenario of the negotiations over resolving the fiscal cliff and when the speaker's election is. So stay tuned. Put the popcorn in the microwave.
So you don't think then that the fact that these are the very thing that we're talking about, that these elections, as they say, have consequences, that this puts some gives Boehner, who's not a fanatic from what I understand, a little more strength and ammunition and comfort, if you will, that he doesn't have to keep compromising because he's afraid of the people looking over his shoulder?
Well, it may strengthen his ability to do a deal, but of course the future is not predetermined, and there's a lot of tugging and toing and froing in the Republican conference. So, again, I just say stay tuned.
Right. Well, I guess there aren't too many moderates left in there, so your point's well taken. I thank you for joining us, Mike Loughran.
Well, thanks. I enjoyed being here.
Again, I've been speaking with Mike Loughran, who spent 28 years working in Congress as a Republican staffer, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of the new book, The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. We're going to take a brief station break and be back discussing whether or not the religious right is on the wane and secular liberal America is on the rise. So let's abandon that track and leave our fathers fighting in a sack.